Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, September the 7th. And welcome to our commentary. Do you realize that we are now closer to Christmas than Easter Sunday? It's pretty incredible. The year is really winding down as we get closer and closer to the midterms, and those are happening in exactly 2 months. Today, we're going to talk about a couple of stories. I have a post over at the American Thinker about President Biden and some of the speeches that he's given giving lately. And I called the post Two Types of Speeches. And that's what we're going to get into today. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about these leaks. These leaks are becoming very troublesome. You now have the Department of Justice. That's the only place where they could come from, because that's the only place where they've seen the documents. And they have been leaking to the Washington Post and the New York Times, maybe another source. They have been leaking stories about what's in these documents. And this is, of course, happening at the same time that the Department of Justice is saying that we have to have total silence. We cannot talk about this because we don't want to jeopardize the investigation. You know, the only thing we've heard about this whole investigation, almost 4 weeks ago, when the Attorney General spoke for 5 minutes on television. That's it. That's all we've heard. And then, of course, we have President Biden saying or denying that he knew anything about it. Whether he did or didn't, I don't know. But I do know that there are leaks coming out of this Department of Justice, and these leaks are going out there to different newspapers who are telling us what's in these documents. And that is not good. That is not good. That is, I mean, if I was the attorney, but the judge who approved this warrant, and I was the judge who just approved the master, I would be pretty angry that we are conducting this investigation by leaks to the media. Now, leaks are a part of life. I don't want to pretend to be naive. Leaks are always a part of life. But there are certain leaks that are more important than others. And for us to be leaking information, those documents, and of course, we know the story, how this works, you know, they say that people close to the information or sources familiar with the information. Well, we learned during the Russia that those sources didn't know anything. Those sources didn't know anything about the Russia investigation because all the sources turned out to be wrong. So how do we know these sources are even correct? We have to rely, I guess, on the credibility of the reporter or the credibility of the editor. But even if the leaks are correct, they shouldn't be doing it. And the one person who can stop this is the Attorney General. He could come down very hard and stop it, but he's not. And that tells you all you need to know about this. I'm very troubled by the fact that they are leaking information to the media about what's in those documents. They should not be doing that. Well, let's talk a little bit about President Biden. As I say, I have a post over at the American Thinker today. You can see it at the American Thinker. I posted it over at my Facebook page my political page, not the personal page, my political page that you have to subscribe to. It's a different service than the regular Facebook page. It's a free subscription, by the way. It doesn't cost you anything, but you have to subscribe to it in order to get to see the post. And I talk about the fact that there are two kinds of speeches in this world. There are good speeches and bad speeches. And the way it usually breaks down is if a president is doing good or he's popular or people are happy with him, a good speech, sort of like Morning in America, or maybe some of you remember President Reagan's reelection campaign, Morning in America. And that's what you get when things are going well, when you're popular, when you're basically telling people what a great job you've done. For example, when President Bush was running for reelection in 2004, his message was, let's stay the course, and I'm the one who can fight terrorism, and let's stay the course. It was a positive message, and it was delivering on the results of his presidency. The type of speech is very popular. and one that we've seen other presidents use before when they're doing re-election. When things are not going well, when things, in fact, are going very poorly, as is the case right now, the kind of speech that we've seen President Biden do, which is basically a speech attacking the other side and basically saying, I'm not doing very good. If those guys get in, they're going to really wreck your life. And that's what they're doing. And President Biden has decided, I guess, his advisors, his consultants, have decided that this is the way you win, by somehow demonizing the 75 million people who voted for Trump and demonizing them just because they voted for Trump. Okay, he doesn't get into a lot of specifics. It's just if you voted for Trump, you're one of these MAGA Republicans. Now, what's interesting, and let me say good morning to a couple of friends who are checking in. Sally, my other good friend, I am. How are you? What President Biden is doing is that he's demonizing people. He's trying to scare people into saying, you know, I'm not doing very well, but the other people, they're going to wreck your life. And that's what this is all about. It's a tactic. It's a tactic to make the other guy so bad and make yourself look better simply by making the other guy look bad. You know, we've seen this before. It's not the first time that such a tactic has been used in politics. But at a time like this, it's an awfully divisive tactic at a time when the country is so polarized. Now, the good news is that there's a poll that came out from the Trafalgar organization saying that significant majorities find these speeches to be aggressive or too aggressive and not the right tone of a speech. The fact that President Biden is walking it back, you know, he's saying, well, I didn't mean it. You know, I didn't mean to say this about everybody who voted for Trump. Well, I mean, he's walking it back because he knows this is not a good strategy or not turning out the way it was supposed to go. But it's a very bad speech. From the standpoint of the country, this is a very bad speech. This is an absolutely bad speech that is counterproductive. Because if you win the election by doing this, what you're going to end up with is an even more partisan and bitter partisan situation after the election. Now, I don't think that this speech is going to help the Democrats. My gut feeling is that this is actually hurting them. But we know why he's doing it. He's doing it because he's got nothing positive to say. He's got absolutely nothing positive to say. So he's trying to tell you, look, I got nothing to offer you, but the other guy, he's horrible. He's terrible. I don't think it's going to work, but this is the strategy. That's what they're down to. As they say in baseball, that's all you got left. One pitch, that's all you got left. And that's what they're trying to do. So check out my post. It's over at The American Thinker. I have it over at my Facebook page. I also have it over at my blog. And I think tonight they're going to publish it at the Babalu blog. That's a Cuban-American blog. They usually post my stuff later in the day. So if you follow me or if you see my stuff over at Babalu, it'll be available there as well. Yes, that is the name of the blog, Babalu, just like the old Ricky Ricardo. Remember when he used to sing that song, and I Love Lucy, Babalu with the Congo drums? Yes, that is what the name of the blog is, the Babalu blog, and it's a Cuban-American blog, and it's a lot of fun, and lots of other people post on there, and it's just absolutely fabulous. I'm very honored that they let me post over there. Now, the other story that I want to get into is what's happening in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania could very well be the most important U.S. Senate race because it could come down to who has control of the Senate. Now, in Pennsylvania, the incumbent is a Republican, so the Republicans have to hold that seat if they want to have a good chance at having a majority. At the moment, you have two candidates running in Pennsylvania. You've got Dr. Oz. Favorite. If I lived in Pennsylvania, I would have voted for David McCormick, who I thought was a much better candidate. Dr. Oz got in a very small margin. He was endorsed by President Trump, and he got in, you know, by just 1,000 votes or something like that. He's not a bad candidate, don't misunderstand, but I think Mr. McCormick would have been better. They are returning John Fetterman, who is a very classic liberal. He's a Bernie Sanders liberal. And, you know, he's a guy who likes to, you know, play off, you know, this blue-collar image, and when in fact he's the son of a very wealthy family, but that's another story. But the big story in Pennsylvania is the fact that John Fetterman had a stroke a few months ago. He had a stroke, and he has not fully recovered. Now, at first, they told us that it was nothing, that he was going to recover, but that was almost 4 months ago. And he still has limitations as to his public appearance. He has refused to debate Dr. Oz, and he's sort of hiding. They're hiding him from public view, which may be totally understandable. I mean, if the guy had a stroke, I understand he's recovering. So I can understand that part. But he's running for public office, and he needs to debate Dr. Oz, and he's not. Now, there's a very good editorial today in one of the Pennsylvania newspapers, one of the major city newspapers in Pennsylvania, basically saying he's got a problem, and he needs to tell us whether or not he can do this. Because if he is elected, it's going to be very difficult for him to serve if he's not fully capable of serving. And it's also unfair to the people of Pennsylvania to have a campaign without debates, without a candidate who doesn't speak and face the voters or the press like most candidates will do. So I don't know what's going to happen, but if this keeps up, I think he may have to step aside. The Democrats may very well have to step aside or move him aside and nominate somebody else to run for the Senate, because you cannot have a candidate running for the U.S. Senate not speak publicly, who cannot take and who cannot debate because they don't believe that he can handle it. Again, I want to make sure that everybody understands. I'm sympathetic to his medical condition, and I have no problem with giving him whatever time he needs to recover, and we hope he recovers. But he's running for the Senate. Maybe he should back out and run for the Senate some other time, because what he's doing right now is not serving the people of Pennsylvania, basically hiding behind the stroke and not answering any questions, hoping the people of Pennsylvania decide a very important Senate seat. And as I said before, this could be the tiebreaker. This could be the seat that makes it 51-49 or 50-50 or 51-49 the other way. So it's an important election. And I think that John Fetterman needs to be honest with the people of Pennsylvania. So far, he's not. He's playing a lot of games. And that has to stop. Well, we're going to say goodbye today remembering Buddy Holly. Buddy Holly was born on this day in 1936, as many of you know. He was killed in a plane crash in 1959. He was only 22 years old. If you've seen the movie, The Buddy Holly Story, you know what I mean. If you are familiar with that song, American Pie, that's what inspired the song, the death of those three guys in that plane crash. Buddy Holly was really just an amazing performer. And he left a tremendous legacy. He was only around for a couple of years, but he left a tremendous legacy. And he had a great influence on the Beatles, on the Rolling Stones, and his influence continues to this day. A lot of his songs are still recorded in pop and country music. So we remember Buddy Holly, born right here in Texas. If you ever have a chance to go to Lubbock, go see the Buddy Holly Museum. It's an absolutely fabulous place to reconnect with one of the giants, I would say, of rock and roll in the 1950s. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thanks to everybody for their comments, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.